Alright, so Mikey.
It's cool, right?
So, can I have you set Frank up where you want him, and then Chris and Eric at two?
Thanks, Eric.
Just like when you were a kid, you didn't put your toys away.
Thank you.
Are we still online?
Yeah. This is one of our famous transitions. Well, let's see. Let's get that guitar piece out.
Rooney.
Frank, that was perfect. Have you heard the Stars End CD, the Blow Up Hollywood Stars End CD? Before I leave, I gotta give it to you. Frank would love that. He was like, it's. We went to this radio station in Philly, actually XPN.
Uh-huh.
And we did, three or four of us got together, and it was the show called Stars End. And the guy that was hosting the show, Chuck, who's been doing it for years and years, since the early 70s.
Uh-huh.
Just said, play, you know, you got an hour, play whatever you want.
Thanks.
And it's very ambient, very ambient type of show, you know.
Yeah.
And we just kind of, like, everybody just did almost like what we did, except a little more ambient, quiet, you know, because it's sleep music.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But it was really, it reminded me of that a lot, you know. I got to give you guys a CD. You guys were really, you were digging it, thank you.
He may have been the one that played, right, because the one time when we were in Philadelphia, there was a guy that was on late at night or in the early morning, and he played one of Frank's tape as kind of a promo.
Okay.
Was it the body music stuff?
Yeah.
N-A, Naked, Cave, that's what he played. But it was music that Frank had composed.
Okay, okay.
And he played it for like a long time.
Yeah. That's a great station over there. It's a great, great station. I mean, one of the great things about the internet is because it opens up people to be able to do more, you know, a wide selection of music, you know.
Yeah.
And that's there's still some traditional radio stations that actually still play interesting music, you know. And when I say that, I'm not, because even Blow Up Hollywood plays song, you know, we play, you know, verse chorus type songs,
right.
You know, but then you can really and you can still, you know, it's still radio friendly, even though some people would say that Blow Up Hollywood's left of center,
right.
You know, it still has that mainstream thing. But the interesting thing, like we were doing in our jam, like that Stars End thing on XPN, it's because it opens up a whole different thing. You have so much more, the palette is so much wider,
right.
You know.
Right,
Dave?
Absolutely.
Am I making any sense?
No, yeah.
He doesn't matter, there's a cat in the
room. I told him that you guys were asking for him. You? Before we started Lover, we thought that there was no good music anymore.
Yeah.
Because we turned the radio on, couldn't find anything.
Yeah.
And then we start Lover and we start getting like dozens and dozens and dozens of CDs and they're all good.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, there is good music out there. They just don't play it on the radio.
No, that's the truth. I mean, there is still good stuff on the radio. It's just, you got to search for it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's only a few hours here or there, or a few minutes here or there a day, you know?
Right.
And it makes, you know, the radio, it kind of, it doesn't expand the minds of the musicians that are coming up in the world to think about other things, you know.
Right. That they O N only play a fraction of what's out there through traditional radio stations.
Yeah. It's really a shame because again, it perpetuates the own culture, the way the environment or the culture is. It perpetuates that because people are never exposed to really interesting and unique stuff.
Yes. S H A L shall L shallow everything D O it shallows everything down.
Yeah. Agreed. That's actually unfortunate. That's the way the whole culture is now.
Right.
It's not just music. It's everything, you know. That's why we named the band Blow Up Hollywood. The idea, the whole idea of Blow Up Hollywood was, and not to literally blow up Hollywood, but the idea of what Hollywood stood for in this culture, you know.
Like. When the G U the guy on in the S T U studio T told you to P L play something that you N E never did before.
Yeah.
This is on your DVD.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it opened us up so much at that moment. I was so thankful. You know, when he said that to us, because you rarely have anybody ever say that to you, you know. It was like, it didn't matter. You know, he was like, whatever you want to do. I loved it.
That is why I get G are great musicians in your band. Because it's an opportunity for musicians to
explore. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's so funny because like when you, what you're talking about and what see if you know what you, we were doing and the Stars End type of thing and you know this is stuff we like to do all the time, but it's hard to find listeners who can be open to that. You know, at least nowadays. You know,
and if. And a lot of N M U musicians can not do it. There are a lot of musicians who have a hard time breaking out of the structure.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. You're right about that. Yeah. And I think it's not even musically, because you know what we were doing before, Frank, was we would. Well, I kind of took a cue from Dave. He started detuning the guitar to get that really low sound when you were playing low on the guitar. So I started doing that, you know. And like at that point, I mean, it's music and you're making sound. But at that point, it's not about so much the technical side of it as it's like the ability to really listen. Because it's this type of what we were doing teaches you to really listen. That's you know you have to really
and to. F O follow.
Yeah.
And to M E L and to melt.
Yeah.
M O most H J A jams R E A really A S E R series of S O L Oh, solos. Not these kinds of jams, but a more traditional jam. It's a series of solos.
Yeah.
Ego.
Yeah, yeah. He's got it. Frank knows. It's hard. It's hard because you run into so many guys like that. You know. I'm sure. So you don't have a. You don't have a. Do you have a set lineup that Frank plays with? So you probably run into guys all the time who are that way. You know.
They in S E Seattle. Well, the most extreme example of that was in Seattle. Yeah. It was an underground club, and they said they had all these musicians that were really excited that Frank was coming, and they all wanted to play. So we let the guy that booked us set everything up for us. It was just Frank and Kay Ashley, who is, you know, this very accomplished noise musician that we know. And so he came with us. And so it was him and Frank and then these three guys and they just, like, turned their amps up really loud just were, like, totally... And I'm thinking, oh, wait, they don't realize. So, like, you know, I go up to them and they go, you know, you're really loud. You might want to turn down because you can't hear. And they turned it down. As soon as I walked away, they turned it back up. I realized, okay, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
W-E-A each guy just... Al, listen to themselves.
Yeah. What I loved about working with these guys is, and because my band is so talented, that I realized more than anything when we do stuff like this, you know, and it's more jam oriented, and you have to really listen and you have to really follow, like you're saying, Frank. But for me, what I love about it is I can sit back and just find the spot, you know, find the right spot, or build like we were doing. You build just the bed. You know, you build a bed, you know.
The end. Then. E. X. P. L. O. Explore.
Yeah. So, Frank, does Frank, you get a lot of people wanting to play with you?
Yeah, we do. Well, what he likes to do is when we're doing a show, he'll just like kind of invite people from all the bands because we're usually like the last band.
Yeah.
And he'll like have me go up and say, Frank wants to know if you'll play in his band, and that's how he gets a lot of people. And then once they've played in the band, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
Let me know next time you're doing something. Yeah, so we get a lot of that kind of thing. B. I. Vinny, that we were talking about, Vinny Santiago, Vinny Spit, Vinny Santino, but he's also had a band Spit, I think, that he was more known for. It was like this hardcore thing, but he's a jazz musician.
Yeah.
And he played on the bill with us at Chemo's in San Francisco, and Frank invited him, and and he was pretty blown out by it.
Yeah.
And he was like, wow. So then when we went to L.A., where he lives... Frank invited him, and him and his wife came, and they both performed in it. And he got, like, so excited about it, he asked if we could swing by his studio and him and Frank do a recording.
Yeah.
They did, like, a 10-minute thing together.
Which is great.
Play?
A saxophone.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was...
Is that on... is that some of the stuff that's on the CDs here?
We'll give you that.
Yeah.
We'll give you that. Yeah.
This is great. I thought the same thing when we were playing. I was like, we got to get Frank either to New York or we got to get the band out here. And then, of course, I thought to myself, I bet you Frank's getting, he's booked his sessions. He's got so many sessions, probably.
Then, B, A, N, band. Right now, he's pretty much banned from the clubs in San Francisco.
He's banned?
Yes.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Why is that?
It kind of got, we were playing a lot for a while, like a lot. We were actually the holiday band at Chemo's for a while. So like St. Patrick's Day and all those kinds of holidays, we were the band. It got G-O goes in cycles. That's what Frank always says, contractions and expansions.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think everything got kind of straight.
Yeah.
And like the people that were booking us,
yeah,
all of a sudden they were getting pressure from the owners of the clubs.
Yeah.
And we were told that not only won't people book us, but they won't even talk about booking Frank.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So you don't even bring Frank's name up, yeah, if you want to play at a club.
Yeah.
I am F L A T flattered by that.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's again, it's so true because people won't. Well, people won't. It's hard for people to. Because it's like the MTV generation, and you know, generations now. But they can't, you have to, your attention span is so short. So to sit and listen to something develop, and then define the moments. Because, of course, when you're doing stuff like this and you're improvising, not every moment's going to be great, you know.
Right.
But there are moments in there, so you have to be patient.
Right.
It teaches you to be patient and wait. It'll come, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And the jams usually last an hour.
Yeah, yeah, so. Exactly. Right.
Yeah. 1 time in Toronto, every after a 48-hour. Frank did a 48-hour performance in Toronto.
Oh, God.
And it was supposed to be 72 hours, but
wow,
he got sick and almost died, like, before, so he realized he had to cut it down to 42. And he changed the name to Dying is Sexy.
Well, but, Frank, that, I don't know. That's pretty hardcore. When you're like, I gotta tone down the set, man. I might not make it.
Okay. But one of the guys that had actually stayed for the 48 hours.
Yeah.
When Frank, at the end of it, he would sit each person down and talk to them about their experience of it. He said, you know, Frank, if you could just take, he said, there were a lot of ups and downs. If you could just take all the ups and string them together,
yeah, yeah,
and then you'd have something. And you said, and. Yeah. L. E. T. Let. Us. D. Diagram. That. Frank said. What. Would. You. Get. You. Get a straight line.
That's it. That's so true.
Flat line.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Take all the ups and there are no ups.
D. E. A. Death.
Yeah, yeah.
Flat line.
It's funny. It's funny because you need that. It's like everything in life, you know, it's that polar opposite that makes it so interesting, you know. So you need those down points where it's like, hey, nothing's happening. But, right, you know, then all of a sudden you got some magic happening.
T. E. L. Tell. Why do you G. V. O. L. U. Volunteer. At. H. O. Homeless. S. H. Shelters.
Why do I volunteer at a homeless shelter? You know, I started doing it my whole life. I've always, you know, I guess most people feel that way. It's like you see somebody on the street and you think to yourself, it's like, it's got to be the most horrible thing in the world to not have a home. And I started doing a little bit when I was younger, maybe just as like right out of high school, you know. And then recently, a friend of my brother's, actually, this is like maybe 3 years ago, she had sent an email and he had told me about it and said, you know, my friend Rosie works, volunteers at this shelter, and they need people, And I said, you know, tell me, you know, where can I go? And she emailed me. And it's the one thing in my life that is so pure and so... Yeah, like I really don't do it for myself, but I do it for myself. And it's like, it's the one thing in my life I feel like I haven't tainted, you know? Like, it's the purest thing. It's like, I don't know, I love when I love going. I mean, sometimes now, after going for so long and doing, well, the last couple of years, and I do the overnight shift, I stay overnight, is I started to think it was going to lose its luster. Like, you forget that you're actually volunteering and doing something helpful. Because you get so much from them going. Because every time I go, I'm gonna. I almost like work. You start to think of the work, like, man, you know, I wish I had tonight off. I could have done this. And then you go there, and it doesn't matter what mood I'm in. When I leave, I'm so thankful I went.
What do you do there?
There's two shifts they have. They have the people set up the dinner, and then when I get up, like when I go about 7 o'clock in the evening, and I clean up the guests for dinner and just oversee the place, make sure everybody has everything they need, linens and towels and, you know, their shaving cream and toothpaste, whatever they need, and like I kind of go and get. And then in the morning, I stay there through the night and make sure everything is cool. And in the morning, I make them breakfast, which is really easy. It's just cereal and juice and fruit and stuff. And then kind of send them off for the day, you know. It's great, though. I love it. Chris did it with me once. We had a great time. It's like, they're just amazing, amazing people. And I've learned so much about not only the homeless, but about myself and... It's just how amazing some people are, and like more stronger than I could ever be, you know.
That was where you G.O. got the D. I-A-R diary?
Oh, the diaries. So Henry's dad was, well, and Henry Hill wasn't his real name, but this gentleman who was at the shelter was a son, perished in the war. And I got to look at the letters and bits of his journal that he had written, and that's what inspired the diaries of Private Henry Hill.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was, another interesting way, you know, to meet so many different people in this, in their lives and what they go through, you know. But that inspired the record.
Have the D A Dad H. Heard the record? The guy...
No. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. No. You know, he... Just like most people at the shelter, they come and go. So I never saw him again.
Wow.
And really, the reason we called it the Diaries of Henry Hill, which is just a pseudonym for any soldier, really. You know, because you figure that what this guy was going through, you know, everybody else, you know, or a lot of soldiers would probably feel the same way, the same thing. Really opened up my eyes to, like, because I've never, you know, once when I was younger, out of music school, I went to music school, and when I graduated, I thought to myself, what am I going to do, you know? And I was like, how am I going to make a living? So I went to an army recruitment. It's hard to believe. And the guy sat me down, and he talked to me, and when I walked out, I thought about it for a day. I really thought about it, and I was like, thank God I didn't do it, you know? Because you don't think of all those other things that go with it. I was thinking of the $20,000 they were going to give me up front.
We G H A had a W O a woman who was a FC O co no a commanding officer no what's a CO
CO is a
conscientious objector yeah she oh Amy Allison right she was in the army and she R E A realized what am I doing here?
Yeah.
She is a B L a black S O so she T H O thought the army was a way out.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think that, you know. And I guess maybe in a time of peace, maybe in some ways, I guess it could be, I guess, you know. Because some people don't, there are people, I won't say this. Everybody has a choice. You know, everybody can make a choice. But I think some people, or I think a lot of people aren't aware in their life that there are, you think they're, you're cornered into something. But, you know, there's always a choice you can make. And I think if more people were aware of that, maybe like, they'd make better decisions.
Like H E N Henry?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Too L A. Too late.
Yeah. No, you're right. And because they're so young. They're so young that they don't become aware. I mean, because look, you know, I'm thinking to myself, it's like, it wasn't that long ago that I realized that I was responsible for every single thing I do in my life, you know? And that I actually have to be conscious of the choices I make. You know, we were talking before about smoking. When I started smoking, I thought, you know, I was never conscious of I was making a choice, you know? And even today, now, even as I try to quit smoking, I've tried a few times, but I try to be more conscious of as I'm doing it. This is when I'm, you know, I'm killing myself, you know. But it takes a long time for people to get conscious, and I think sometimes people are still, you know, you can live to a ripe old age and not be conscious of the choices you're making and who you're becoming in this world.
Oh, you, our. K, oh koala. We have two kids and koala was a guest on the show and so he grew up. There were actually five of us that parented him.
Yeah.
And so Frank set him down and said, "Okay, now's your chance to get back at us." And it's all going to be on tape. But he talked about that, the conscious thing, because there was a point. I don't know, maybe he was like 9, 10, something like that. He stole money. And okay. He tried to, and he blamed it on the black kid that was hanging out with him.
Oh, okay.
And we figured out it was him. And at that point, Frank said, "Okay, you're going to have weekly meetings with me."
Yeah.
Because he would see people coming through to have weekly meetings with Frank. And so Frank set him down, and they would meet every week and just talk about life and things like that, you know, and about being responsible. And when he was on the show, he said, "One of the things I really remember was when you were trying to explain to me that I was responsible for everything I did."
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, "I think I got that." He said, but he said, "I meet people now and I don't think they get it, even as adults."
No, I think you're right. I think most people don't. Because I think if they were, there'd be a lot of decisions that people would make that they probably wouldn't make anymore. Mm-hmm. You know?
Right.
And then again, we were just talking about this last night too, because you make certain decisions and choices, and once you come to it, you realize that you make certain decisions and choices, and you're responsible for yourself. Then you got to really take responsibility and be, you know, accountable for the decisions you make. And that's why a lot of people don't want to admit that they always have a choice.
And they don't think they have a e effect.
Yeah.
They think it H J just F U C K fucks them.
Yeah. Yeah.
S so it does not. So it doesn't matter. That's the way they're thinking. It doesn't matter. It's only going to screw me up. It doesn't have an effect,
on
any,
the whole world. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If in a J A, if in a jam, we T O U G thought, if in a jam we thought that.
Yeah. Well, that's, again, it's the same thing. And like you were saying before, it's like not listening. And a lot of times, you know, you cannot listen to other people. And you cannot listen to yourself. You know, it's funny when we were playing, because I thought the same. I thought this while we were playing. I'm like, as we were doing our jam, I thought to myself, thinking to myself, this is one of the few times when I'm in that this kind of a situation where I actually really listen. You know, and I'm like, in life, I walk around this world rarely ever listening to anybody or anything. You know, it's like,
S. So, why is that? So why is that,
Oh, man. Because I got a lot of stuff I got to be responsible for that I don't want to take the responsibility for.
Like? I am J A jamming right now. Like?
Well, smoking. We'll go back to that. Smoking for an example. Right?
Something else. Use something else as an example. C H Chris.
Want me to help out here?
Give us an example.
Be really careful.
Chris said, how long is this show? I don't know if he's coming. Two hours.
There's not enough time.
Give the H I high highlights.
Oh, man.
Does he need a mic? Or we can pick him up.
So.
Okay, go ahead. Give the highlights.
Give me the highlights. What's the highlights? Where am I not listening?
Well,
be honest. I want to know. I want to know what you think.
Places you're not listening. Well, possibly Maybe to yourself at times. Not listening to yourself. Your instincts sometimes.
I think you're right. All right, that's
when?
Good.
Like when?
Frank wants the dirt.
He wants the dirt. Maybe in love.
With women.
Maybe in love.
Yeah.
In right. with the in general with love.
Okay.
With love.
How?
Go ahead, I want to know. Come on.
Let's see how.
Let's just make sure. I want to call.
Who's listening?
Who's watching this? I want to make some quick phone calls. Right. Look, I think the show's over. I think you should turn off now.
I just think. Let's see. How could I skirt around this?
Don't skirt around it.
Don't skirt around.
I will. Not L E let you skirt around it. S so why bother trying?
Well,
you could say, you know what, I'm going through now. I'm going through Frank. Frank! I'm going through a little relationship problem. I've been married 17 years. My wife's my best friend. I've been married 7 years. Been with her for 17 years. Best friend. And I'm not the greatest husband.
How not? Chris, no, is that who you asking? Either one.
How am I a bad husband? Am I a bad husband?
Take it away. You got the mic.
I think...
You're not a bad husband.
No.
You're not a bad husband. You're just in... Well, you're...
My philosophy is different. And I also think I have issues. Now Frank's going to be like, you got to get... Frank, we got to call my therapist.
That is why I am a S.H. shaman. S. So, how are you not? No, how? Not. How don't you L listen in that our relationship?
In relationships.
In that specific
relationship.
Yeah, how do you not listen in that relationship?
How do I not listen? I think I know, even without my wife telling me, I know what she wants. And sometimes I'm not even listening to, it's not even sometimes words. I'm not listening to her inner being, if that makes any sense.
S. So. Why? Why don't you give her what you know she wants?
Because then, you know, this is the big issue. This is not only my wife and I. This is the issue of the world. Because not all the time what I want is what she wants. And not all the time what she wants is what I want, you know. But the great thing, I think the great thing is we've managed, unlike most of the world, to be able to understand that with each other and I guess accept it, you know. Wait, I want to ask Frank a question.
Why? A. Why accept? Why accept it?
Why accept what?
What you just said about that sometimes what you want isn't what she wants.
Try to make it the same thing.
And vice versa. And why accept that? Yes.
I don't know. That's a good question. That's a good question, Frank.
If A G O good a good answer. How about a good answer?
Dave,
dude.
I haven't heard one word out of Dave. I don't know. I mean, let me ask you this. Are you and Frank married?
Well, none of us are legally married.
None of us
are legally married,
okay.
But we are as if married. You know, we are, we see ourselves as one unit.
And you're talking about the group, the four of you.
Yes, the four of us.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So, there must be, you know... There's certain people I've met in my experience in life where they don't like I love them and I care about them very deeply, but my beliefs and my feelings about how I want to live my life aren't always what they believe, right? Because you couldn't have that relationship unless everybody was in agreement and felt the same way and thought it could make it work, right?
Well, I think in a basic way, yes, that's right.
Right.
I mean, that's like basically what it was about for me and for all of us was putting relationships first and letting everything else come in around that.
Yes.
And seeing that if you do that, everything else does actually come in around that.
Yeah, that does make sense. I agree.
Yeah, yeah. Is that the FCA case with the two of you?
I think we're getting to that point. I think we're working on that point because I think for the first time in the 17 years that I've known my wife, these last 3 months or 4 months is the first time we've really, not that we never communicated before, but we're really communicating honestly and like really being really open with each other, which I think is great. So I think that's the place I'd like to be able to go with it where, and I think we're actually headed in that direction where it's like, where I'll listen to what, I can see what her needs are and what she wants, and she sees what my needs are and what I want, and find a way to make that work for the two of us the best way.
And M. E. Melt them together, the needs.
Yeah, melt them together. Yeah.
Like J. A. M. Jamming.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice, Frank. You just took
it. Now you're turning to Dave.
You worked me over good enough. I'm gonna get a call when I'm out of here and be like, "What did you say about us?" I'll tell you, Frank said everything right. I don't want you ever. You should listen to Frank.
She will. T. Thank. Thank me.
You're going to get a knock on your door tomorrow. You guys want a fifth?
I'm like, where's that bed again?
How did You two get together? You guys.
You tell the story.
Is he mic'd? Talking to that mic, okay. I guess.
A bunch of years ago, I was in a band, and Steve was in a band, different band, and he was scoping out our bass player. The bass player. So they came down his band and they were like at the side of the stage like and I'm playing. I'm like, who are these guys? You know? So they came to scope our bass player and they did some gigs together, and then after that we kind of went our separate ways, and then I met a girl who I had another band and I needed a girl singer, and I met this girl and then she wound up being friends with Steve. And then we all did a gig together, and then me and him got to talking, and Steve was like, you're going to play guitar in my band. And I'm like, what? He's like, no, I'm telling you, you're going to play guitar in my band, and that's how it happened. That's a long time
ago. We started playing together. We've been playing together now for like maybe 15 years.
Oh, wow.
But the funny thing is, Dave is, his primary instrument is drums. And the first band I asked him to play him, he played guitar. I asked him to play guitar in my band. And then in Blow Up Hollywood, he plays drums, he plays guitar, keys. He plays everything. And he has his own thing, this band called Posse Guru and the Dave Diamond Band. And he sings and writes songs. He's just so talented. It's crazy. So we always called Dave Band in a Box. Uh-huh. So you open the box out, out comes the band. What do you want him to do?
Nice. And U, S, C, O, R, score, M, O, movies?
Yeah.
We've done some movies. There was a movie in the Tribeca
Film Festival. Film
Festival.
What was the name of that movie?
If you get the title, I forget.
Sounds like us. What was that?
Kiss Me Again?
I don't know.
Your friend was in it. Remember she was?
Yeah.
But we also score, we when we play live, we score our own movies that we make too, as well.
This? M A makes us F feel really good. Yeah. When Frank turns to me and says, what was the name of that thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Mikey, Erica.
It's like you should know, right? Yeah. You should know what's going on. Yeah. I hope he wasn't listening in the filmmaking. That wouldn't be good. I'd like to thank, what's his name?
You know that guy. What is your D-A day job? What is your day's, what is your day like? Who are you asking, Dave? You're asking Dave now? What is your day, a typical day like for you?
Well, I teach students, private students. So usually I'll be teaching or writing music or going to a gig. I mean, I kid around, like if the daytime it's like I'm on a break from a gig, because every night it's always a gig or a studio, blah, 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 blah. So it's all music. My days, nights, it's all music.
No. R. E. L. Relationships. No relationship. No someone special, Dave.
Oh, body is one.
I'm really going there with me. No, I have a relationship and a very good one.
Go ahead, Frank. Ask him more.
N. E. Never. H O M, never home. E, never home, eh?
Yeah. Well, I try to find
such a good relationship.
Exactly. Well, my girlfriend, she travels a lot too.
She's out now. Yeah.
Yeah, she's in Europe now, on her way to
Israel. Yeah.
Soon.
What does she do?
She is the vice president of PR for the Weizmann Institute of Science. So,
oh my.
So it's the whole thing.
Yeah.
But the reason
Vice President of PR for the Weizmann Institute of Science.
To give you how that relationship goes, though, a little idea. We had originally booked our trip to come home from Oakland on Wednesday. And Dave called me after we already booked the flight and said, we have to come home on Tuesday. And I said, why? Do you have a gig on Wednesday? He said, no, Bonnie comes home. Mm-hmm. Which is his girlfriend.
Right.
So he had to get back.
G. Good. G-O. Going to I, Israel, now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of a dicey situation.
Yeah. I don't address it as much as I mean, I talk about it. I talked about it with her when she was leaving, but, you know, you could see it was a tense thing, so I just kind of played it cool, and, you know, I mean, it'll be all fine, you know, but it's just not the best time to be going there.
But then, aren't you going to Iraq, Baghdad, on vacation? Which I thought was strange.
What is the NY? New York City, S, scene, like, now.
Dave?
For music?
For music and art, like just the whole, like music, art,
yeah.
Scene, yeah. H, E, R, here. It's not. It's gone down the tubes here. The smaller venues have all been closed down, and it's like
the
chains, like Borders Books and places like that, where people are.
Well, Starbucks.
Right.
Is now
where people are performing.
But Starbucks has become a record company. Every time I go to Starbucks, I'm like, I don't like to go into Starbucks and buy anything. But the few times I have caved, it's hard to believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is it like that in New York also?
Yeah, I mean, well, some of, like, there's a little town I was living in Seacliff, Long Island, on the North Shore, beautiful, no corporate anything there. All of a sudden, a little Starbucks store popped up, and, you know, everybody in the town was like, what? Because they have their own coffee shops, you know,
right.
Where it's cool, it's a scene, they have music, you know, da-da-da-da. But, you know, I mean, that's just the beginning of probably everything else. Weaseling its way in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, you know what, New York, maybe about 10 or 15 years ago, I used to play with an older guy, Chris Jefferson, who was a really great bass player. And I remember him telling me, he's like, the New York music scene is going downhill. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? And sure enough, you know, now I see it. He was right, you know.
Yeah. A lot of cool clubs have gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. C, L, the clubs here. No, the clubs. Oh, that we played at in New York. Well, let's see. What was the name of it? Here we go again. What's his name? Not CBGB's. The other guy. S. U. Surf.
Surf Reality.
Surf Reality. It was in kind of a bad part of town. It was like an art music
place.
Okay, yeah. Right.
And we performed there a couple of times. And then, like, the last time we performed there, it was, like, kind of dangerous to stand in front of the place.
Yeah.
And then the next time we performed there, there was this fancy Japanese restaurant next door where the owner came out and said, "Why are you standing in front of my restaurant?"
Right, right.
You know, and then the guy told us that he was losing his lease, and then that's the end of him.
Yeah, yeah. It's really, and it's expensive. You know, sometimes I the club owners can be, you know, they're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place because they want to get people in to listen to the music and make the money so they can pay the rent, but the rent's so high, so, you know, they end up, you know, it's a bad situation. The music business in general is a bad situation, you know. The entertainment business and blow up Hollywood, that's all I'm going to say.
N-O now we have a W, no, an S, E, S E R. Oh, we have a series. There's a an underground, like a legal club in Richmond, California, which is like the bad. It's like where people who can't afford to live here now are moving to Richmond.
Yeah.
We have a series now once a month where Frank promotes, puts on, produces a show that's just for cable.
Okay.
So that's the way they're getting around the legal stuff at this point, because they were operating as a club for years. He would just keep getting relationships with the local cops.
Yeah.
And they would kind of have an arrangement. Well, if you keep this from happening, we'll turn away. And then he just got closed down again. A new mayor, new set of cops, new chief of police. That's what it was. But we're supposedly on once a month where Frank gets guest bookers. They book the show, but it always has to be Frank's band as the closing band.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's like a monthly gig.
Gotcha.
And then it goes on cable TV.
They're kind of doing the same type of thing in New York, where it's like bands are finding their own spaces, and they're creating their own club for the night.
Right.
Right.
Well, it's kind of what we did when we played at the Knitting Factory. Right?
Yeah,
We created our own night.
Yeah.
You know? So if you can get in there and make that happen.
Yeah. Like, we rented the club. We like, what we like to do is, because we don't like the way the clubs sometimes even treat the band.
Right.
So we rent the club.
Oh.
And then we take the club over and, you know, tell them how we're going to run the show.
Right.
You know?
Right. We were, can, not. We tried that. Even rent. That's when we realized, whoa.
Yeah.
There was a place we rented. It was like not cheap either.
Yeah,
and we rented it. And we put first night, we pull in a crowd.
Yeah.
And the guy at the end of it says, it looks real good. We're happy with the way it went.
Yeah.
Yes, you can rent it again. Then when Frank goes to rent it, well, we don't want you here on the weekends.
Hmm.
Only on the weekdays, which, you know, for Frank, getting people to drive up from L.A. on a Thursday night, it ain't going to happen, you know.
We're kind of the same way, you know, the same way. But usually what we do is we do it during the week. We do it on a Monday, which is like nobody wants to play on a Monday. But the reason we do it on Monday is the cheapest time to rent.
Right.
And it's also musicians' night off in New York City.
Oh.
You know, entertainment business night off.
Right.
So we can always get people in the industry to come down, you know, and hang out.
I A S. He asked the guy, finally, they were going back and forth with the email about renting it. Frank said, okay, how much would I have to pay you for the space on a Friday night to where you would, because they would get, in addition to our rental, they'd get a percentage of the door, to where you wouldn't care how many people showed up. What fixed amount? Never heard from him again.
Yeah.
He said, I'll have to talk about it with my partners. He just, like, disappeared.
It sounds like the Mercury Lounge in New York City. Where's the camera? I want to look in the Mercury Lounge. Can I flip in the bird? No.
Yeah, go ahead.
But the Mercury Lounge is a good club in New York City. And our managers have called this place so many times and said, we want to get the band in the spot. We want to get the band. And for some reason, I don't know if the guy just doesn't like us or what the situation is. And it's, you know. So then the guy calls us. It was 2 days after New Year's. This is a week before, 2 days after New Year's. Yeah. And it's on a Monday, and asks if we would fill a spot for him. So we say yes, you know, to do him the favor. We go and we play. Maybe there was like 30 or 40 people. It wasn't a very good turnout. And he never, after that, we called him like maybe 2 weeks after. Oh, said, let's book a gig. And he just still wouldn't take our phone call. We were like, I couldn't believe it.
Oh, my.
So wherever you are, Johnny Winter's name, right? You.
Okay, so we've run out of time. Yes, so what do we want to, H? O? L, Blow Up Hollywood website, www.blowuphollywood.com.
Blowuphollywood.com.
Any other, anything else? Go from there. That's good.
Yeah, that's great. That's good enough.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much for having us here. And Frank, thanks for having us, letting us use the instruments, and also all of you playing with us. Yeah.
G. O. O. Good. L. Good luck. E. X. P. L. Explaining. Explaining. To. Your wife. All right. So on that note, good night, everybody.
that was funny. U. G. O. Got.